This episode is brought to you by FX's The Veil, starring Elizabeth Moss. FX's The Veil is an international spy thriller that follows two women as they play a deadly game of truth and lies on the road from Istanbul to Paris and London. One woman has a secret, and the other has a mission to reveal it before thousands of lives are lost. FX's The Veil premieres April 30th, only on Hulu.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower-than-low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Acast powers the world's best podcasts. Here's a show that we recommend.
What do you do when no one else is watching? What do you do that makes you happy for no reason at all? What are you obsessed with? I'm Leslie Arfin, and I'm a writer, but I'm also a dancer, a painter, a vapor, a dollhouse enthusiast, and basically just an overall hobbyist. My podcast, Filling the Void, is all about what other people are fanatically into. We talk about hobbies, even if you don't have one.
Listen to Filling the Void on Tuesdays on the Irios Network and subscribe wherever you get your podcasts.
Acast helps creators launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts everywhere. Acast.com.
Hi, Dave here. I am not with my wife, Kathy. I am alone. But I am here. I'm not alone because all of you are here. And I am here with a special PSA because Succession, the greatest show on TV right now, is coming back for season 3. We are incredibly excited. And we thought, what better time to post our 2-hour chat about season 2, which we did for our Patreon episode a few years ago. We thought we'd post that here on the main feed. So for anybody who wants to get up to speed. And also, to let you all know that we are going to be doing weekly, episodic episodes, week to week. That's what weekly means, Dave. Over on our Patreon for Succession. So as soon as it airs, we're going to start weekly episodes, just like we did with Game of Thrones back when that was a thing. So if you'd like to join the fun, then come join us over at patreon.com/thecinemile. And of course, if you're not watching Succession, then you can take Logan Roy's advice and fuck off! Hello, Cinemile High Club. It's
Hello.
Dave. It's Kathy. It's the Cinemile High Club. We did it. We finished Succession. We've seen it all. Full spoiler warning for Succession Series 1 and 2. If you haven't seen it, go and watch it because it is, for my money, the best show on television.
I mean, nothing can compare to it. Like, every week, I'm not joking, after the episode, I literally couldn't sleep. I was that excited.
Yeah, that theme music just goes through your head all night while you stare at the ceiling.
Just thinking about it, like, every week and how, like, it's epic. Like, it's absolutely epic.
I wish I could say, fuck off, the way Brian Cox does. Fuck off!
That's a good impression.
He is.
It's so good. And it's one of those shows that kind of halfway through we went, do you know what? We really should be doing, like, weekly things about this because it's so hard, like there's so much happening, but we didn't know if enough of our listeners actually watch it or not, so let us know if you do and we'll do it for
yes,
season 3.
If you've watched it and you're listening to this, just pop a note in the comments saying I watched Succession,
because we need to know, because season 3 will do every
we're just
week.
Interested in numbers,
yeah, because Game of Thrones we knew you all watched, therefore it made sense, but it doesn't make sense if like 3 people are listening.
Yeah, and to the rest of you, to the however many of you minus 3, go watch it. Just please. I cannot recommend this show highly enough. And get in on the ground floor because this thing's going to kick off soon and it should be one of the biggest talking points. I mean, The Guardian wrote an article about how it's the new Game of Thrones. I don't quite buy that comparison necessarily.
I don't buy it because it's better than Game of Thrones.
Oh, big shout. Okay. In many ways, it is better than Game of Thrones.
In every way.
Now, certainly, okay. The way we're going to do this, like Kathy said, we probably should have done this week by week because there's an inordinate amount of things to talk about because basically they packed so much into every episode. The way we're going to structure this is we're going to go through the Roy family one by one, plus Tom. He's technically a Roy.
He's a Roy.
And we're going to just discuss their sort of, say, character journey from the beginning of this season to the end of this season. And we're going to finish the end of this on the bombshell. We will get to the bombshell. So strap in.
It's
going to be
a
long episode.
No, it's a blood sacrifice.
No.
It's a double blood sacrifice.
Double blood sacrifice.
It's the best.
Yeah.
I literally, after the episode ended, was just like... And do you know
what? I have never been more excited. That was Red Wedding level excitement.
Honestly, shock. What's been so great about this, though, is like for me, it's the proof of like the ultimate way to consume TV. As much as I enjoyed when we binged season one of Succession because we caught up on it late, it's getting it weekly. Because it's getting that...
Oh, but is it though? It's a painful wait.
It's a painful wait, but every Monday we were so... like, honestly, we had 10 great Mondays in a row where we were genuinely, like, excited for Mondays.
Yeah, that's true.
And it's Sunday night in the States.
And you get that thing, like Game of Thrones, I know we keep mentioning that, but you get that collective discussion.
Oh my God, everyone in my office is watching it. Like, everyone in my office.
Which I absolutely love. Yeah. All right, so look, let's get into it. We got
and
a lot
some people
to
say,
talk about. Some people will say
hold
what?
On a sec.
What? Sorry. Okay. We're on a muddy path here, letting people...
No,
back.
I'm saying some people are like, oh, I haven't watched it yet, no spoilers. And I'm like, fuck you. You didn't watch it on Monday night.
Fuck
you
off.
Don't deserve to be part of this conversation. But that being said, I would never spoil it for anyone. Because I'm the one who's telling everyone to watch it. My little sister just started watching Elizabeth, so she'll be listening to this in a few weeks. My mom's just started watching it. Everyone's getting on the...
All right. Look, we're setting up. We need to get on, get on the Succession train.
One last thing.
And
do not
listen
if you haven't seen it.
We said that.
I know, but just
now, can
reminder.
We talk about the show?
Yeah.
Okay, reminder. Yeah, full reminder,
oh,
full
careful,
spoilers.
Really
okay, lots of mud. Okay. All right. Hopefully we're not going to... Kathy's just walked ahead now. Okay, are you gonna wait for me?
Yeah.
Or just going to talk about this by myself? Okay.
No, it's too... I just didn't want to step in the mud.
All right, okay. Okay, here we go. Right, we're going to start with Connor.
Yeah, we're starting with the easy one.
He's kind of the least connected in many ways. In many ways, he is the outsider Roy.
Comic relief.
He is, but there are a lot of comic relief characters in this. Like, Greg's essentially a comic relief character.
Connor has no non-comic relief moments.
He does. He has moments of humanity in this.
He really doesn't.
He does. The heartbreaking realization of his financial ruin.
Yeah, but his financial ruin by his own ill-gotten gain.
Oh, hang on. I'm not saying he's not completely to blame for his own financial ruin. It's still a human moment.
Define financial ruin.
He said he sunk millions. He said at one point he says he's sinking 50 million a week into this play. What's the thing? He was like using actual human bones or flesh or something mental.
I just don't think you can be defined as in financial ruin if you end a season on like the Italian, you know, in a yacht in Italy asking your dad to lend you whatever 500 mil. I don't classify that as financial ruin.
Yeah, but nothing comes without a price tag. Like, basically, and this is classic, in that instance, this classic Logan Roy making, negotiating with his own children because he told Connor he has to cease his embarrassing political campaign.
I would too, if I had that kind of power to wield
again,
over my son.
It's his father getting leverage. And that's what's so good about this. The family is a business dynamic, it's a family business, but he runs his family like a business, and it's all power plays and negotiations.
But I'm sorry, if Con was my son, like, it's like when I'm trying to brush Oscar's teeth and I'm like, look, you can watch In the Night Garden if you let me brush your teeth. If I was Connor's dad and I had that much money, I'd be like, I'll give you money if you stop this embarrassing, like, this humiliating thing.
You get 500 mil to stop your...
So let's go back to the beginning.
Your
charge of
the White House.
How does the season even start? Does it start with
Connor,
him pitching for president?
For Connor, roughly. Look, we're going to skip over some details here. But the first sort of big moment for Connor is that sort of Instagram announcement that he's beta testing.
I ranch, I ride, I earn... And I give, just like you. But, ding dong, who's there? Uncle Sam. And where's his hand? in my pants.
Hey, is there anyone in my house?
Hey, have you seen this?
Yeah.
He said he's beta testing it before he Instagrams and enters the ideas primary.
Maybe he's a genius.
That's one word for it.
A genius rancher.
All I want is a fair, flat tax, same for all Americans, but headed down to zero within a decade or so. What am I going to do? Well, I'll tell you, I ain't paying.
Oh, my God.
And if you want to arrest me, go ahead. No, really, just go ahead and try.
Quick question. Do you think he even knows what a jail is?
Which is essentially he's running on scrapping taxes. He says that in a few years into his presidency, he will reach zero tax levels.
So funny.
And how he presents that. It's him leaned back, holding a beer in his kitchen. You know, he presents himself as an everyman, which is it, and it's the kind of sort of billionaire delusion that you see from Donald Trump and others.
Connor lives in a 5-star hotel. Like, he actually lives in a hotel suite.
Is that where he lives?
Yeah, that's when they have their housewarming.
Logan lives, isn't it?
No, when Connor and his Willow have their housewarming.
He lives on a farm.
But in season two they have a housewarming in a hotel and they're like, we live here now.
Oh,
that's
right.
That's their
okay.
housewarming party.
I missed that. So that's the sort of the main.
And don't you remember, he's like, I'm doing this for the common people, and he screams out, and one of his siblings says, don't you think it's ironic that you're screaming that from the top floor of a hotel penthouse?
No, I don't even remember that. And that's kind of, so his political journey, we don't get a whole lot of this in terms of movement. I feel like they're saving the meat of this for a later season.
There's a lot of leaves rustling. I mean, I think it's going to get dark and he's going to become president. Like, he's like a Boris Johnson.
Seems too obvious though, but yeah, who knows. But what we do get is the moment where he goes to Uncle Mo's funeral, and Willa actually, she's the smarter of the two. Yeah, clearly the smarter of the two, who suggests that perhaps he should not be associating with these types of people. Quite prescient. And then you get one of the finer comedic moments of the whole series, where he's committed to go up and give a eulogy to Uncle Mo, but wants to distance himself from Uncle Mo, and in the genius speech essentially says Uncle Mo was a person. He lived. And I think Willa even wrote that for him, correct?
Yeah, I think Willa wrote the whole speech, yeah. Like, because he was about to go up and like be, oh, Mo's amazing.
And Willa's an interesting character, sort of very side character, but she's clearly, her skills are more in the political writing, speech writing, rather than play writing, it seems.
I want to see her play. I think there should be a bonus episode that's just the play, because I want to know what's going down. But I really enjoy her because I think, you know, she's being, obviously she can't stand Connor, but she's like definitely getting what she wants off him, and she's like rightfully manipulating him because he's so stupid and rich, you may as well.
Yeah.
So yeah, I quite enjoy what she's doing.
I do like, Alan Rock.
There's people ahead of us who are just screaming.
They're in a what is that?
What's the name of that boat?
It's a rowboat. Yeah.
That thing that rich English people do.
That's it. How appropriate. Alan Rock is so good in this role, and some of the lines they give him are just so wonderful.
Is he the guy from Ferris Bueller's Day Off? Is that what we know?
Yes,
him
he is.
From?
Yes.
Right. I was trying to think why I knew.
Spin
him.
City and other things. Speed. He was one of the people
so
on the bus.
So good in this.
I love how when he's at the play, he's like. His slow dawning realization of how this play is ruining him, and the way he describes when they're at the opening night, and he's introducing Kendall to one of the actors, and he says, "Oh, this is one of the best actors. He's real good at pretending to be other people." It's so like belittling. I think that's kind of the main thing. I mean,
there's only one scene in the whole series where you feel like Con's in on the joke.
Why are you calling him Con? Is that what they call? I thought it was Connor.
Yeah, but they call him Con.
Do they? Okay.
And what are his followers are called?
Oh my God, the Con heads.
The Con heads, yeah.
And he becomes a meme from the congressional hearing.
He becomes a meme, but like with Hitler, and he thinks that's a good thing.
Oh. There's a lot of Nazi analogies throughout this season.
But there's this really good scene, and it's part of Greg's plot later, but oh my God, these rowers, I cannot cope with them.
It doesn't
Why
matter.
Do they scream
Come
like
on.
That?
Because you have to be at the top of the boat screaming to motivate people. Isn't that how it works?
The
just
main,
like business.
The main people screaming are the people who are cycling along this muddy river path.
Yes, they're not part of the boat. I don't know why they think that.
Anyway, there's a scene when Greg like denounces his inheritance and Con and Tom start taking the piss together out of Greg.
Because he said
he's
still
going to be the richest poor man.
He's still going to get, what, 5 mil or something?
They're like
it?
5 million is pathetic pittance, and you're going to be the richest poor man in America. It's like being the tallest dwarf. It's shit. And I was like, oh, Con's being funny in this scene. And that's kind of the one and only time we see that. Because they're all very funny and very quick-witted. And like, it makes sense that Con could be like that as well. He's just usually too wrapped up in himself.
Well, what's interesting,
to kind of join in any jokes.
Is he the character with the least amount of self-awareness?
I mean, the best part of Con, which I don't think we've mentioned, is at kind of in the last episode when they're all on this boat together and there's this like brilliant lunch where they're all trying to say who should go under the bus. Con is the only person who volunteers himself, and he says, oh, okay, I know what we can do. You can say that I've been a malign presence working in the background all these years, which, if you notice, is what Kendall quotes later. Kendall says my father was a malign presence that always lurked in the background.
That's brilliant.
So, but the fact that Connor offered himself up and everyone just went, like, you're the only person here who no one would buy, like, and Con's just like deflated, like, and I just thought that was so good. You can't even throw yourself under the bus for your family because no one cares enough, and you're so incredible.
But also, it's an act of, on face value, it appears like a selfless, virtuous act of loyalty, but
it's
not. He's doing it because he needs that money, and he's willing to do prison time for that 500 mil.
I mean, I do prison time for 500 mil. Let's get real.
Let's move on, or we'll never get through this.
Yeah, Con was our shortest
very long
paragraph.
Family, but just wonderful stuff. How about we move on to cousin Greg?
Yes, awesome. Greg the Egg / Gregxit.
You can't make a tomlet without breaking some Greg.
So good. There were so many memes. I forgot to say, the other thing I did every Monday after watching Succession was then waste an hour of my life on Twitter, because the memes and the tweets about Succession were so good. Oh. And it was that like shared viewing moment again of a weekly show. Now I know we're like a bit behind the States, but it was that thing with Game of Thrones as well, that like, it's just so fun to be part of that.
Let's talk about Greg and Tom in Succession, because
They are
such a wonderful comedy duo, but with sort of that, but as with all of this show, even the comedic characters are sort of tinged with humanity and pathos.
I mean, Tom,
particularly Tom,
so
Matthew McFadden.
Is it McFadden?
McFadden. I'm not sure.
There is a
Y in there.
Oh.
He skirts that line so well.
He's just, it's the actor is so good. Like, I think in another actor's hands, you may feel too sympathetic or not sympathetic enough, but he gets you right on the line. I mean, obviously the writing's incredible as well.
But across the board, like, there's not a weak actor that shows up in this show. Like, the casting choices married with the writing.
And there's never a bad scene. Like, there's never even one scene in an episode where you go, they could have done without that one.
No, or a scene where you're like, I don't believe this.
Yeah.
Or I don't believe that character would do that. Like, this is a marriage of acting and writing that is rare to find, and I feel like it's only going to strengthen as this show continues.
Oh my god, like, season 3 is going to be the peak. I promise you, season 3 will peak and then it will tail off.
No, don't say that.
It's my prediction.
Okay, anyway, let's carry on with Greg. So Greg and Tom, at the beginning of the season, Tom gets a promotion and becomes the head of ATN.
Which is hilarious.
And brings Greg with him. And I love...
Greg's his executive assistant. I hadn't quite realised that until the end when they said it at the hearing. I was like, what is Greg's job? I don't know.
Greg is essentially his lapdog.
Yeah.
/ best friend. According to Tom, when Greg tries to break up with him.
Did you notice, though, because none of them have friends outside of the family, right? Mm. And Greg's come in as, like, a relative newbie. Greg also serves that purpose with Kendall as well. Lesser than Tom, but, like, at one point, you know, Kendall, like, gives him his apartment and then makes him have a party he can go to. Like, Greg, because they don't really get to interact with so-called normal people, Greg's about as close as they get to it. And yet, hilariously, we realise halfway through the season that Greg's set to inherit hundreds of thousands of dollars hundreds of millions or at least 5 million. And because Greg's always been the so-called normal one to us as well, it's like, oh wait, no, he's only normal to them, to us.
Yeah.
He's unfathomably rich. So it's interesting that he's like, Tom thinks he's really cool like when he's with Greg, but like, is the scene where they go out to dinner and eat all that food, was that in this season?
That's season 1.
Oh, that's so good.
So they start at ATN, and Greg, what I enjoy about Greg as a character is his he's sort of growing a pair of balls, for want of a better expression.
That's a terrible sexist phrase.
It really is. Okay, well, give me a better way of saying that then.
Would you say he's like getting more self-confidence?
But it's not just self-confidence. He's gaining the wrong kind of self-confidence, and he's learning the worst kind of lessons from these people he's surrounded.
I don't think so, because Greg comes good in the end.
Does he though? He's employing the same tactics, just with a side that we're rooting for. Like, basically, it's blackmail. He's just switched sides. Like, Greg, in that moment where Greg breaks up with Tom, which is one of the better scenes in this season, and then blackmails him in a wonderful, like, bit where Tom is both horrified and proud,
yeah,
of Greg for retaining some evidence.
No,
to
I
blackmail
think Greg
him.
Is definitely becoming more comfortable operating in this world where he was not in season one.
Yeah,
and he's clearly got some cutthroat tendencies, right? Like, he's not quite the innocent little lamb we thought. So I think, yeah, that's all fine, but I don't like the phrase "growing balls."
And he's smart. Oh, fine. Look, I apologize for using an archaic term. Like, I'm a whatever. I grew up in the dinosaur world, like the rest of us. All right, I'm trying to change. Well, what else? What else about Greg? Because that scene is particularly interesting with Greg and Tom in the safe room episode. When they're not in the real safe room, which
oh,
I particularly
and also
enjoy.
It's so good, and Tom's just like willing for everyone to die ahead of him.
Yeah,
brilliant.
He's pushing people out of the way. Executive coming through. But when Greg, quote unquote, breaks up with Tom in that scene, he uses the words, "I want us to have an open business relationship."
Yeah, that's brilliant.
Which is both hilarious, but also really tragic, because that's what pushes Tom over the edge, because it's. It's parallels with what he's going
through with Shiv. Yeah.
So
it's like this double burn. His best friend and his wife both want to cheat on him.
But that's what's so good about this show. At no stage until the last episode of this season does it say on paper that Tom, or does he speak the words that he is not comfortable with the relationship with Shiv and the open marriage that she's suggested. And we don't hear those words till the very end. But Matthew McFadden expresses that through his eyes at every possible juncture and moment.
Anyway, we need to stay on
and
with
it
Greg.
Comes out.
We're staying on Greg.
Okay, fine.
You're the one who said we should go character by
character.
No,
I said Greg and Tom are like so joined at the hip. It's
impossible.
Yeah,
but let's talk about Greg's performance at the trial. Okay, that was amazing.
Let's just drop that clip in here right now, because that's worth listening to again.
Senator Eavis, it's your time.
Gregory Hirsch, executive assistant to Tom Wamsgans, correct?
Yes. Yes, if it is to be said.
I'm sorry?
If it is to be said, so it be. So it is.
Are you all right?
Yes. I merely wish to answer in the affirmative fashion.
You can speak to us normally.
Okay. No, thank you, sir. So I shall.
Okay, so Greg at the trial is... I mean, look, really, it's just played for comedy. We don't get much more of that.
No, I wanted to watch his whole thing, and they cut away, and I was like, no, go back to it. Like, so good. And he's just...
But ultimately...
But I like that Greg... Like, that I love with Greg that, like, Tom was getting him to destroy stuff in season one, but that he didn't destroy it, and then even in season two, he didn't destroy it fully either. Like, he's... He's like like they play him as a bit dumb, but like he's certainly smart enough to know that he needs, around these kind of people, needs to keep some leverage. And I think he's also very uncomfortable with what actually happened on the cruises as well. And I think...
Always has been. And that's what's interesting about Greg. And he's uncomfortable...
Like, he knows that's wrong.
But he's uncomfortable ethically working for ATN. So he's a bit like... He's a bit like Shiv in that he's the one who expresses...
Yeah, like
more
he's
left,
like, I don't like this news. He's
left-leaning
like, I don't like
sensibilities.
The news.
Yeah. However, with Shiv, I never feel like she actually means any of it. Do you know what I mean? I feel like it suits her to be the opposite to her father, or it's a state of rebellion. Like with Shiv, I never actually buy her politics. It feels like a mask she's donning.
It's like that privilege. Yeah, I'm left wing, but it suits me because I'm really privileged. Like, you know, she's not she's centre left. She's not like, you know.
Yes, but I rarely get a sense of humanity from Shiv. It's there, but with Greg, it feels like he's someone who is
young as well. Like,
yeah, he's genuinely uncomfortable with ATN, and that's what finally erupts in him breaking up with Tom.
But he's still very happy to take their money and work for them. So.
Let's talk about well, that is no more obvious than when he gets the choice from his grandfather of leaving Logan and getting his inheritance or staying with that family. And it's the kind of frustrating TV moment where you're just screaming at the screen, no, Greg.
It's because he's been sucked into the Roy vortex. Like, they're very seductive. Like, personally, I'd like to spend time with them. Like, I
what?
Think, like, as in, I'd love to be in a room listening to them all speaking. And like, they're
but we are in a room listening to them
and
all
we
speaking.
Love it.
I'd rather be on the other side of the TV. I would hate to spend a minute with these
people. No, but I'm just saying that, like, Greg's been seduced by the lifestyle. They throw him enough bones. Like, he is part of their inner circle now. And the granddad's only offering money when he dies.
Well, okay.
But right now, they're offering Greg influence, friendship. Greg is actually doing a lot of coke in this series as well, which
yes,
we see every now and
which
then.
Which he was reluctant to do in the first season. So
Greg
it's again,
is like enjoying the lifestyle, and like the apartment Kendall gave him is like incredible. Do you know what I mean?
Greg is Walter White at the beginning of Breaking Bad, and he's slowly becoming Heisenberg.
Well, his hair is getting shorter.
And
when Greg actually got his hair cut and was like wearing a suit towards the end of the series, I was like, oh, suddenly Greg looks like an attractive man. Before that, he looks like this kind of odd man child. Like, they did a good makeover on him. It was subtle, but it was quite noticeable. I thought his physical appearance by the end, he looked quite suave and handsome.
Well, that, you know, and then that ties in with his, you know, internal transformation. He's becoming more presentable and businesslike.
Yeah.
Because on the outside, the Roys appear externally to be good looking and rich and successful. They're probably quite like aspirational to many people, but inside they are just a horrible, terrifying mess.
I mean, it all comes across in that whole episode, which was just epic, where they went to the home of the woman who they were trying to sell the company to,
the Pierce
who they were trying to buy the company off, the Pierce family. And their whole facade, how fast it unravels. Like, they cannot function for 48 hours as a presentable family unit.
Yeah.
Like, that should be a really easy job. Like, and that was just fascinating to watch every part of it unfold. Was incredible.
Back to Greg for a minute, because you made an interesting point there about him being seduced by the lifestyle.
And seduced by Roy. Like, Logan Roy, like, says to him in the bathroom, you know, stick with me, I'm your fun uncle or whatever. And to have Logan Roy even be bothered to say that to you is probably
that's true.
Hugely seductive.
Even though we know Logan so well now, you could just see him switching on his charm for a second that doesn't give a shit about Greg.
Yeah, but you say that, right? And you say, but Greg is actually invited to everything. And I know it's a plot device to get the actor in, because he's
great. That
doesn't
mean he's important to Logan.
No, I'm not saying he's important to Logan, but he's been deemed part of the inner circle, which no one else has been let into other than Rhea. So it is a place of privilege, and clearly Greg's enjoying it.
True.
Like, he gets invited to everything.
But here's the thing about him being seduced by their lifestyle. In the final episode, there are a few moments with Greg where he's walking up to the yacht with Tom, and Tom kind of says, how about that yacht, right? And he kind of just goes, yeah. Then later in the episode, Greg is sipping rosé and says, it's not my favourite.
No, he's sipping champagne.
Champagne or whatever. It's like, it's not my favourite. Like, the lifestyle that you're saying he's been seduced by means nothing to him.
I'm not saying he's been seduced by the lifestyle's part of it. I think he's been seduced by the family and being part of their inner sanctum.
No, you're right. He has been seduced by that lifestyle that comes with the family.
Yeah.
And we saw that in season one. He was going to these crazy parties and was impressed and awed by all of it. And in season two, he's not. He's numb to it, just like rich people.
Well, yeah, but I also, yeah, agree.
And the family,
agree.
Like, none of that impresses them.
But also what I thought, though, was interesting is that in the last episode, I also thought that, like, Greg was really grappling with the cruise stuff. And sorry, but if you're on a boat with a family who you know covered up murders of people on a cruise, you're probably not going to be really up for, like, a boat party. And I read it as him also just being, like, quite depressed by the whole thing. Like, it's not so much that, of course, he's like, yes, it's a beautiful yacht. Like, it's an obscene yacht. But, like, I think he was just kind of depressed as well. And it's so funny, I thought, like, they spent all this money, right, to be flown out to Italy to go on this yacht. They may as well have been, like, on a yacht down, like, the Hudson River in New York. Like, they don't care where they are. They don't do anything in Italy. They're just on this yacht. Like,
but that's
so
what that's what I'm saying. The opulence is just background to them. It's wallpaper. It doesn't matter to them. All that matters is power plays and dynamics and basically just getting the respect of Logan.
Oh, yeah,
father.
That's all they care about. That's all they just care about. Be daddy's number one boy.
Yeah. And
but it's funny because when we lived in Australia, I used to work on a food channel, programming it, and I loved it. And I used to, because all the chefs and whatever on the channel used to like court us because they wanted to keep making programs for the channel. So they'd bring us to these amazing restaurants or like cook for us. And the first couple of times it happened, I was like, oh my God, like freaking out. And I have to say, a couple of years in, I would be brought to these amazing restaurants and like in these private dining rooms and the chef would be like hand delivering the food. And I was like, yeah, that's really nice.
You were like, where's my accoutrement?
I was like, I was impressed, but like, and this is a very teeny example, but it does wear off if you go to enough fancy restaurants. And I didn't even go to a huge amount. It was probably 10 of them over the space of a couple of years. But it was enough that like, the difference in my reaction to the first one versus the last one was quite huge.
Kathy's like, I asked for this ostrich steak medium rare.
Yeah, so anyway, I think there was two things going on there with Greg. I think he was grappling with his conscience and also, of course, has gotten very used to the opulence.
Well, let's one final thing to chat about on Greg. What do you think about him using his evidence to back up Kendall in that final scene? Now, we don't get any insight into the steps that led to that moment, but what do you think? Like, that's a huge move. He's backing Kendall instead of Logan.
I think there's a couple of things going on. I think he says like what your dad did was really shitty, and he really believes that like what the dad did is doing to Kendall is shitty. I also think we've seen Greg is making power moves, and like he said to Tom when he blackmailed him, he said like, give me a better office, give me a better title. He will have agreed like. In the next season, if Kendall's like CEO, I guarantee you Greg's like COO or whatever.
You reckon he'll get COO?
Greg's gone for something big here. Like, he's given Kendall actual physical evidence of the dad signing off on stuff in the cruises.
Yeah.
Greg would not have done that without asking for a lot.
I feel like Greg is unprepared for this shitstorm that's coming his way, though, from Logan Roy in season 3. What do you think?
I mean, he won't be able to cope with it.
He has not experienced the full brunt of what that man can achieve.
Yeah, but you forget, look, Greg did grow up with that granddad, who's pretty hardcore as well. We just haven't seen much of it.
Yeah.
Like that scene, I loved scenes in Scotland between like Logan and his brother. Like the brother's hardcore.
The brother is wonderful.
Yeah, and Greg grew up with that, so like Greg's more resilient than I think we think, because he's been played for laughs a lot.
Your empire of shit.
Yeah. So good.
All right, well, let's leave it there. Let's talk about.
We're gonna run out of river path.
Let's talk about Tom.
Okay, Tom. Hey, Tom. We're good. Because it doesn't feel fucking good, Greg. I will not let you do this to me. I will not let go of what is mine.
What am I doing? Ow! Stop pumping! Stop! You
fuck!
Stop!
Fuck!
Stop! Security!
Guys,
no, you back off! You back off! This is executive level business! Okay? No!
Tom, okay, so becomes the head of ATN, which is interesting because Tom is also somebody who is clearly uncomfortable with ATN and its politics. But they all are, but they also don't care. Like, he instantly
they're all like, if you were to ask any of them at a dinner party, probably would all, excluding Logan, all the kids would probably self-identify as like left-leaning and believe in real journalism. Right, I'm sure they'd all think that of themselves. Of course, that they don't live that at all.
They certainly don't present as far-right conservatives. But
they're very happy
but
to push that
are.
Agenda.
But they are. They're capitalists through and through. But what's interesting about Tom in that in one of those very early scenes with the managing director of ATN, whose name I forget.
You know, she's great.
She's very good. She's like, Logan sends me one of you every few years and I chew them up or whatever, you know, she's the consistent one. He says something to her along the lines of,
he's like, not this time, bitch.
Like, you know, it's something like, I mean, you know who your audience is, you know, he Tom knows that they are Fox News stirring up trouble and
he's so dismissive
hate
about the audience,
speech, etc. But he doesn't care, and that's what's interesting about Tom. He's as willing to make the pact with Satan as any of them. He's only in it for power and success and climbing. And we don't really, you rarely see a struggle with Tom's sort of whatever amount of ethical beliefs Tom holds, and compared to what he's doing.
Well, Tom thinks he should be CEO of the whole corporation. What's it called again? Something Core.
Waystar Roy Core or something.
I don't know what it's called, but Tom thinks he should be CEO of the whole thing. So Tom is like very delusional.
Tom is delusional, yeah. If he thinks he has what it takes to get there.
But also, he thinks he'd get it above any of the other contenders.
But that's what's so good about Tom, is like he is selling his soul actively.
I wish we knew more of how him and Shiv met.
Sorry, we're going through a huge puddle here. This is, oh my god, okay. I gotta skirt around the edge, we can't talk for a second. And we're back. Okay. That would be interesting. I'd almost love like a prequel episode.
Like, did
of
they
them.
Meet, was he already working for the Roys when they met? Like, that's the bit I can't decide, because he's very senior in the company even before this promotion. And like, also, he was head of cruises.
It feels like whatever love they had for each other or the initial attraction has worn off or been eroded over a long period of time. Like, it's hard to see why they're together, and by the end of the season, you know, that culminates in that erosion, in that heartbreaking scene with him and her on the beach after she has like literally stabbed him in the back in front of everybody.
But I think
Tom,
she's
makes
so
sense.
Used to, she's so used to operating like that with her brothers that she, like, she said to him afterwards, oh, I was just saying that because I had to look like I was willing to throw you under.
I know.
She's so, like, there's a scene in this where
that's why she
where
is heartless.
Roman tries to say, like, you know, like, he nearly died, and he says to his siblings, like, can we actually talk about our feelings now? And then they're like, oh, can we talk about our feelings now?
Yeah.
And like, that's what Shove's grown up with. So she's confronted when he says on the beach, I'm so unhappy with you, I just can't figure out if I'd be more unhappy without you.
Oh, what a wonderful,
so good
bit
and,
of writing.
And she's so devastated, like, she's crying, and she's like even holding that in because she can't actually like discuss, she's incapable of discussing. She's like, but you know I love you, like, that's all she can say. And he's like, you waited until our wedding night to ask for an open relationship. I mean, that was so awful. Like, I mean, at least tell him before you get married, like, that's what you want. And she's trying to organise a threesome, and he's just like, does not want one in any way. And when she's like telling him that she's like shagged this actor guy, and he's just so devastated. Like, it's just so not what he wants. And I think she never really sees Tom as like human almost until that moment. Like, she's so used to just treating everyone like that. And then she goes to her dad and she does say, like,
yeah,
it can't be Tom.
It's the final act of, it's the, probably the only act of redemption and a final one for Shiv.
Yeah, but she's saying make it Kendall.
I know, that's the thing. But she was also willing to sacrifice Kendall anyway. She was in the blood pact conversations with her dad, or the blood sacrifice from the previous episode. But she does, she does choose.
About Shiv, we need to go back
she
to Tom.
Chooses between Tom and Kendall,
yeah,
and
like,
ultimately
I think
does
in her
choose
own
Tom.
Really fucked up way, she does love Tom. It's just so fucked up.
I think so too.
And like, what's so good? We skipped ahead a bit, but one of my favorite scenes with Tom is like very early on in the season when Shiv says, like, it's me, Dad's picking me. He's like, but what about me? Where does this leave me?
Yeah, like, they had their plan. Like, he thought it was the two of them rising him to the top, which is just such an unrealistic dream, even from the beginning. But he was bought into it.
From his point of view, though, he's like, I was head of cruises, now I'm head of AETN. Like, from his point of view, like, he is on that trajectory.
But yeah, you're right. Tom is like Connor in many ways, in that he doesn't have this sufficient amount of self-awareness to realise, A, he's not good enough for it, and B, he's never going to be given it.
Yeah.
He's never going to.
I think, like, he probably is good enough for it. We've not seen much demonstrated by him, but he's certainly never going to be given to it.
I don't think he is. We certainly don't see the ability that we see demonstrated by from Kendall and Shiv in particular. And Roman, to a certain extent. I mean, he certainly comes good by the end.
They're so manipulative. Like, nobody can become that manipulative unless they've... I just think, like, it's impossible to become as manipulative as the Roy children or Logan.
Yeah, true. And you're right. He is the... Of the family that we're talking about, He is the outsider, the actual outsider who's trying to buy in but can't. And that's why Matthew McFadden plays it so well, because he is horrible and cutthroat frequently.
Yeah.
But it almost feels like he's, you know, it's not natural to him. It's something he's had to learn and develop. Like,
yeah, it's adaptive
underneath
behavior.
It all, and this is how he presents it so well, he's just a puppy dog. He's just...
He just wants you to love him.
You pity him and you warm to him. He's a heartbroken, sad man.
And what about his performance at the court case? That was amazing.
Oh my God.
That was my favourite scene.
I mean, it's one of the most uncomfortable... To watch someone squirm under that amount of pressure.
And he's like, but they asked me the questions I had to answer, and all the Roy kids go, just don't answer. And it's like, that's been drilled into them their whole life, whereas he thinks, no, I'm in front of like the Supreme Court or whatever it is. Of course I have to answer. And that's where like he doesn't have that lifetime of media training basically they've been given.
Yes, you're right. It doesn't come naturally to him. And in those final moments before he goes in, he's nervous and he asks the PR guy, the Cruz's PR guy, for another refresh. You know, let's run through it all again. He isn't prepared.
No.
He just can't be. Not when you see, like, Kendall going in there
Kendall's
and it just rolls off his tongue.
Yeah.
One other earlier thing I'd like to talk about. It's kind of a Logan moment, but the Tom, you know, you're talking about Tom's ability, but... He doesn't work in that family dynamic. He doesn't work with Logan, because in that early scene with Boar on the floor,
Logan's
asking them all, "Do you think this is a good deal?"
That was very.
And he
unpleasant.
Just mindlessly he's a yes man with Logan. He doesn't present opinions.
And but I would
punished.
Say yes to anything Logan says, because he's so scary.
Yeah, but then you'd be bored on the floor. This is what happens. And that scene, let's drop a little bit of that scene in here right now, because that's worth a refresh.
Which one of you boars did it? Tom!
Yes?
Sit on the floor. It's fun.
Seriously?
Yeah, it's a game. Boar on the floor.
I feel...
Get down! Boar on the floor. Boar on the floor. Kendall, ring the troops. Boar on the floor.
Guys. Boar on the
Cow,
floor.
Cow, get down. Greg, on the floor, boar.
Boar on the floor.
Boar on the floor.
Boar on the floor.
Come on, Frank.
Boar on the floor.
Frank.
Why am I in this? How the fuck would I know, Greg? You think I have a rational explanation for this?
Frank.
Boar on the
Feed
floor.
Feed the piggies, guest
boar
of honor.
Boar on the floor.
That's it. Boar on the floor. Boar on the floor. Oink for your sausages, Piggy. Oink, oink.
Oh, Jesus Christ.
Oink for your sausages, Tom.
Oink.
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 No, no. No half-hearted oink. I want full-hearted
oink. Oink, 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 oink.
It's honestly one of the most grueling bits of television.
Yeah, I really didn't enjoy that, actually.
No, it's uncomfortable and... and disgusting, and just it's a car crash. You can't look away.
But he absorbs that behavior, because then later on in the season he brings Greg into his office and he's got his feet on someone's back.
Exactly, it's the next episode.
Yeah,
so
Tom is horrible as well. Like, let's not, like, as much as we enjoy watching him and we love the actor and we enjoy the character, like, he is horrible.
No, but this is back to my earlier point. It's as Tom is learning this behavior, much like Greg, and it's not. It's doesn't
Tom's
come.
Just adapting it
doesn't
very
come
quickly.
Naturally to him.
Dave,
it's something he's putting.
It comes very naturally if by the next episode you've got your feet on somebody's back. Okay.
No.
He's not Snow White. Like,
I know.
And I love in the court hearing when they're like, "Have you ever used a staff member as furniture?" And he's like,
I love how they brought that back. But
so
you're right.
He's
it
like,
is.
Let's not. Okay. In the context of the Roy family. We love Tom. In the context of what he's like to anyone else in the show, he is absolutely vile and disgusting.
Yeah, but and
okay,
that
let's
was,
not
and
let's
that
not lose sight of that.
Presented from the very first episode in season one, where you realise that duality to Tom when cousin Greg, who shows up as the actual outsider in that episode, Tom just flips on him. He's nothing but nice in front of everyone, and then literally just flips on him, and we see sort of Tom's other side,
because he's just happy that he's not at the bottom of the pecking order now.
Yeah, and he just wants, he is so used to being Logan's shit heel, he's
Logan's shit heel. I've never heard that expression.
Oh, whatever. You know, he's Logan's lapdog. He's just, Logan is shits all over him, and he's doing the same to Greg and anyone else he can.
Because can we quickly talk behavior. About when he picks up the he goes to Shiv in the final episode on the boat. He says, "I'm going to talk to your dad," and he sits down, and you're like, "Yes, this is the moment he's going to really tell Logan off." And then he just takes a chicken drumstick off Logan's plate, eats it, and puts it back again. And Logan's just sitting there, and then Tom just gets up and walk away, and it's so good.
I thought it was wonderful.
Comes up with that, like, in the writer's room, like, but it's thought of that, like, that's amazing writing.
But it's so perfect. It's so perfectly Tom, because it's the only act of defiance we've ever seen him do against Logan. But he was unable.
So
but he's also so unable to. He was unable in those moments to put words together because he just can't do it. In the same way he wasn't able to defend himself in the hearing appropriately, and so it just comes out as this sort of desperate, panicked.
And then Logan's like, "What next? He's going to put his dick in my pie or whatever."
Anyway, one final thing.
We keep saying one thing.
On Tom.
There's so much to say on Tom.
So much. But the one of my favourite segments, and this was pretty much just comedy, was Tom and Greg at the corporate retreat when he's having to present ATN's new tagline.
Oh my god, yes, and I forgot about that. So much happened, I forgot about everything.
We here for you. Just that whole thing. I mean, that's why this show is so good. You could, if you'd stripped this show of all the comedy, it would still be one of the most horrifying, fascinating family dramas.
Because I wouldn't, if you stripped it of the comedy, I wouldn't enjoy it, because there was elements of season one before it really got going, like the pilot in particular, where it was too dark for me and I thought it was too nasty.
Yeah.
So the comedy for me is what makes it so perfect, because you need those moments.
You're right.
Or it's unwatchable.
It balances it so well.
Yeah.
But it's also just incredibly sharp satirical writing.
Well, isn't it by one of the writers of The Thick of It or Veep or something?
It's Jeremy Armstrong. He wrote most of The Thick of It. He wrote some of Veep. And
yeah,
he's the creator. He's the creator of Peep Show.
Yeah, you can tell there's a comedy person behind it, because it hits all the right notes that a comedy should hit. It just also has all the amazing,
right,
epic drama.
And actually, The Thick of It is a very good sort of cousin to this, because it applies that same level of sharpness
and it's
nastiness.
And it's fast talking.
And
blinking,
the
you
insults,
miss it. And like, there's so many layers to every scene as well, that like, I'll be talking about it with people in work the next day, and we've all noticed different things the other ones haven't noticed. Like, I think
Wonderful.
You could go back and watch it again and see a lot of different things.
Let's move on from Tom. We'll never get this done. Next up is Roman.
Wait, is that why you're here?
Mm-mm. No, I don't know. Maybe. I don't know. No.
Jesus Christ. Roman, this is unacceptable. This is completely inappropriate.
Yeah?
What would your family say if they knew you were here?
Oh, what would my family? Jimmy Fuckcorn? I don't care.
Yeah, but you do care.
No.
Yeah, I know you do. And they would be ashamed of you. And rightly so.
Okay, I'm very sorry, Jerry.
No, you don't get to speak. You have always been a disappointment, but this is just... You have gone beyond the pale.
I have?
Oh, yeah. You know what you are?
What am I?
You are a sick fuck. You're a sick fucking animal.
Yeah?
Yeah, don't look at me. Get in that bathroom. Now. Go on.
Roman has definitely become a character that I enjoy more in season two. He was too much for me in season one. Like, as I said, the pilot was quite dark, and like, the first real introduction to Roman we have is him, like, I can't quite remember what it was, but he offers a poor kid loads of money and then burns the check in front of him. Like, he does something really awful.
Yeah.
And they warm him up by the end of season one, because we learn that, like, basically as a kid, wasn't he like locked in a cage and like used by the family.
Told he was a dog.
Yeah, like, it's really dark, the stuff that happened to him.
You only ever get glimpses of it, which is another reason this show is so good. It shows immense restraint at providing you information. It gives you little teasers of their backstory, whereas I think a weaker show would give you an entire episode with the backstory of the Roys and show them as children. And actually, by revealing too much, you diminish everything. Whereas by giving these little glimpses into what makes them who they are, such as in season one, Logan in a swimming pool, and we see scars upon scars on his back, and it's never mentioned again.
Yeah, and it's implied he was abused as a child. And there's a scene in this series, I can't remember, maybe midway through, when they're all in a room and the dad's in a rage and he just turns around and hits Roman in the face.
Yes,
and
okay.
And that is basically, and immediately, as much as none of them are ever on their side, Shiv and Kendall freak out and the whole room erupts. And you're like, oh, this is the dynamic they experienced as children.
Yes,
because
exactly.
It was so visceral. And they leaped to defend their little brother because I'm imagining that for whatever reason, I'm sure they were all treated to lots of at least verbal abuse by their dad as children. But for whatever reason, it appears Roman was like a physical punching bag and was actually physically abused by being locked up and stuff. So it's like that moment. And then later on, the dad kind of... They're in a limo and the dad's like, he doesn't even say sorry. He just goes, are we okay? And Roman's like, yeah, sure.
My hand slipped.
But that's the extent of the apology, and he hit his son in the face.
But that is literally an example of, that's a domestic abuse of a family situation. There's a classic.
The dad's abusive, like, there's no way about it.
But it's
he's verbally abusive, but I'm imagining was very physically abusive as children.
Yeah, but also then that is the dynamic of a physically and mentally abusive relationship.
Yeah.
Then apologising.
Oh, someone's got a megaphone out to talk to the rowers.
But the thing is with that moment, and this is, that's interesting because at every point throughout this season, we see Logan both telling his children that they are the one in terms of Shiv, you know, you've always been the one, or with Kendall, you're my boy, and, you know, freaking out in the save room, where's my boy? You know, he shows this... He gives affection. No, but it's impossible to pick a favourite because he doles out affection as a tool for loyalty.
Yeah, but in the save room episode, Kendall was the only one he was worried about.
In that moment. But then by the end, by season episodes 9 and 10, Roman is the golden child and he's hailing him for his business acumen. He's making him CEO. And
no, he doesn't make Roman CEO.
Or sorry, he makes him whatever, MD, whatever the position is.
No, it was just that Roman and Kendall were sharing a position and now he says you can do it on your own.
Yes, well, whatever that is. And then he
COO.
Yeah, but that's him finally acknowledging Roman and as that. And then he's blood sacrificing Kendall. So basically,
I plan on blood sacrificing Oscar.
It's the same with Shiv. He tells her has been her. And then throughout the course of the rest of the series, Alien pushes her away and alienates
her.
We're
not here to talk about Shiv and Roy.
Fine.
We're here to talk about Roman. What is fascinating with Roman, and this is where they really mix in like the fucked up drama with the comedy, is like that Roman is incapable of having sex, but when he tries to have sex with his girlfriend, he says he's only going to have sex with her if she plays dead. She needs to lie there
so
and pretend
horrifying.
She's dead. That is dark. But then, and you're like, ugh. And then, but then it's, they make it funny because he goes into Jerry's room and locks himself in the toilet while she basically tells him he's mommy's bad little boy or whatever the fuck she's saying to him. And he's masturbating and it's like, oh my god, like this is so dark.
Well,
but they managed, because this stuff and him and Jerry have a very funny dynamic, they managed to brighten it up. But I think, is that the last time we saw the girlfriend? I don't think we saw much of the girlfriend after that.
Yeah, she kind of disappears after that.
To be honest, I would probably disappear as well.
Well, the thing is, here you can apply some sort of pseudo-Freudian analysis let's psychosexually analyse Roman.
Well,
because
Logan brings up Freud, because at one point towards the end of the series, when Logan's like wife has left him, Roman's actually the only one who says like, are you okay, like she's left you, do you have anyone to talk to? And Logan's like, what, you want me to go to a shrink? I don't want to fuck my mother. And you're like, oh, so that's whenever they try and talk about feelings, clearly the dad just references Freud.
Yeah.
And is very dismissive of any sort of conversation about your feelings.
But here's the thing, right? They grew up in that environment with that father who, well, yeah, A, is unwilling to discuss feelings. They had
B is abusive.
They had an absent mother who, even when she is present,
we meet the mother, she's horrible.
You get an insight into her. She's absent even when she's present.
Yeah, she's awful. I loved that when they all went to stay in her house,
leaving them a note.
Roman's
to
like,
say,
I have to talk to you about
goodbye.
Something, and she's like, bye. I
no,
mean,
Kendall. But Roman, Roman is, as you said, a victim of domestic and physical and mental abuse, and he is a product of that, and it's manifesting itself as somebody who can only get sexually aroused by being punished. Right? Yeah. It's a sort of... And look, I don't know a lot about S&M or these...
Or by a woman playing dead.
Well, yeah, which is even more horrifying. But I don't know a lot about the sort of ins and outs of BDSM and all that. But
don't even go there.
That looks like... Let's
not get into a BDSM discussion.
But there is element... There appears to me in that there is elements of that sort of submissive... sexuality.
Obviously, but I also think it's the mommy thing.
Yes,
that's where
exactly. Jerry is a maternal figure to him, in many ways. She's someone he respects and admires, and has turned to for advice, and she also adopts that position, that sort of nurturing position. She essentially leagues with him and associates with him, and they kind of form their own sort of power play dynamic and fantasize about them running the company together.
Well, he says we should get married at one point, but everything he says is so flippant and it disappears. And I was really
pleased
at the end when everyone's throwing everyone under the bus in that boat scene at lunch.
Oh, and he defends Jerry.
Everyone kind of says, "Oh, Jerry," and he's so clever. It's like the cleverest we've ever seen him. He says, "No, it shouldn't be Jerry," but he says, "She's the only senior female in the company. What are you going to do? Get rid of her in this scandal? That would make you look even worse." And immediately, because it's such a good point, everyone goes, "All right, it can't be Jerry." But he saved her, and we know why, but nobody else would know why. Like, remember when in the episode where the kind of captive thing was happening, and they were in the hotel, and and he's like, "Would you shag, marry, or avoid?" And somebody said, "I'd shag Jerry," and he's like, "Ew," and he's trying to make a face, but he's like a little kid who has a crush, and they're trying to hide their crush, and his whole face. There was loads of gifs about that on Twitter afterwards. But what one of the things I love about Kendall, I'm getting their names mixed up, Roman, they all the kids are very distinctive ways, every character is really distinctive ways of speaking, but Roman's is that he is completely inarticulate. Like Roman, someone would be like, "How are you?" and he's like, "Yeah, fucking weather, lunch, sure," and he'll just walk off. And even with Jerry, he's like, "Yeah, fuck you, we should get married, bye." Like he can't articulate. So that's why when he did articulate that thing about the senior woman and Jerry, I was like,
I kind of disagree with you. I think that those you're right, those moments happen where he kind of blurts out. It's almost like Tourette's syndrome, all these sort of little quirks come out of him and then he just walks off. But I feel like that's In those instances, it's him trying to express himself and what he's actually thinking. Like, "Let's get married." It's almost like,
"I love you. Let's live happily ever after."
It's emotional Tourette's. It's his actual feelings bursting forth, and then him instantly pushing them down and disregarding them and walking away or making a flippant joke. Do you know what I mean?
But even there's a scene earlier. There's a scene at some point in this season where the three Roy kids are put on stage at a conference. And Roman can't speak. Shiv and Kendall do all the heavy lifting.
Yeah, and he
Roman,
says, the only thing he says is, "We'll do whatever anyone wants," or something that, right?
Like
he says the most inane and the worst
inane
thing.
Yeah, he's inane. That's exactly
say.
Everything he says is inane.
But let's talk about that and his sort of whatever business acumen, because that's kind of his character journey for this season is becoming the sort of the businessman he needs to be. And we...
And he goes to his little training camp.
Yeah, and so at the beginning of the season, he goes into that Valter company that they're stripping with Kendall. And we see the same dynamics we saw in the first season. Kendall is the smart one. He's sitting down with all their papers. He's figuring everything out. He's essentially the one who does all the work.
And Roman's goes and gets
Roman
pissed with a few interns.
Yeah, although that was an interesting dynamic because it showed... Actually, Roman did gather some insight about the company and the people by going on the ground level.
Yeah, but Roman's doing the kind of grunt work that you get, the COO should be doing what Kendall's doing. So one of his lackeys should be doing what Roman's doing. The COO should not be the one going out and getting pissed with interns.
But it indicates that he is smart and he is clever, and ultimately we do see that in the sort of his final decision about the Turkish deal.
Yeah, but I mean, anyone with half a brain, clever compared to Schiff and Kendall.
No, but the difference is, yeah, fine, anyone could look at that deal on face value and say, "This is a terrible thing." But who's going to sit there in a room with Logan Roy?
Because he's one of his kids, though. That's why he can
do it.
No,
but it's not just that. This is a defining moment for Roman because he has never done that previously. He disagreed with Frank and the other guy whose name I forget.
I can't remember the lackeys' names.
But they're pushing this deal, and Roman knows it could save the company, and he makes a very brave and difficult decision, and Logan rewards him for it.
I don't think it's that brave and difficult. He's basically been held up at gunpoint by these people, and he mainly says, it's not just that he says, I think it's a bad deal, he says, I don't think they're going to pay up. Like, he says, I don't think the deal's actually going to happen.
Yes.
I think if he was confident that the deal was going to happen, he might have pushed aside the ethics of it. But I think because he just doesn't trust them.
No, I think this is his ethics coming to bear. Because he's not comfortable dealing with these people, these clearly, like, dangerous vipers owning the company, whereas the other guys are just for financial
ruin. Well, the difference with him and the other guys, though, and this is what's interesting about the Roys, is the other guys, there's nothing in it. I'll push it, it's fine. I'll push the buggy now that it's not muddy anymore. The other guys would have immediate financial gain if this happens, right, and then they leave.
Yeah.
But the Roys are very dedicated to this brand and this company, and I think any kid, if they've been involved in it, would have been like, this isn't right for our company.
I really disagree with you on this. I think this is Roman coming out of the end of this season with actual business credentials.
Oh my god,
and
I'm
sense.
Saying he's way better than he was in season one. I just think,
and I don't think he would have done the same thing a year ago.
No, I don't think so either. I think he's shown real character development, and I think, like as I said, around that lunch table, he really held his own when it came to Jerry.
However,
like, he's deaf, but he's still like,
no, you are
by no means should be a candidate for CEO of any
fine,
company.
But I mean, you're right in saying that Shiv or Kendall would have sat in that room and probably made the same decision. But Roman has changed. That's his journey, and he kind of, in a way, has earned his new position. Anyway, let's move on from Roman.
Like,
or are we going to be
no? Can we just talk about one more thing with Roman, which is when he goes to Scotland, and I can't remember which team it is now, but it's Hearts or Hibs.
Oh god, yeah.
And he's like, that's my dad's favourite team. because we used to live in Scotland briefly, we have firsthand seen some of the rivalry around those teams. We were like, oh my god, this is hilarious. And then he buys the dad the wrong team, and the dad's like, that's not the team I support. And Roman's
and
like,
I'm
it
pretty
is.
Sure it
and the
is.
Dad goes, oh yeah, I don't know what team I've supported my whole fucking life. And then Roman goes to the team and tries to give them like an inspirational speech, and he's actually like,
go and
play football and shit.
Yeah.
That was really good.
That's so wonderful.
It just really summed up that desperate need to please his dad and just how badly he goes about it. Like, but even if he'd bought the team the dad liked, the dad wouldn't have cared. Like, if the dad had wanted to buy the team, he'd have bought them a long time ago. Like, the dad wants for nothing.
Yeah,
like,
that's
you know,
a good point.
It's just so dumb, the whole thing. Just shows how much disposable income all the kids have. Like, it's not like their money's locked in a trust fund. Like, they seem, like, including Connor's stuff, they seem to have direct access to huge sums of money.
Yeah, but that's because he probably just gives it to them. There's billions on to play with, right?
Yeah.
Anyway, come on, we could talk about the financial logistics of that family forever.
Oh, massive puddle.
Can we just turn back? Let's go back the other way.
Okay.
Let's talk about Shiv.
Tom, this is 100% not going to happen, but it's smart to say yes, right?
I am so excited for you.
Thank you.
For us. I am. And you know, it's okay for you to say that you want it. I'd support you.
Well, look, I mean, say I did want it, and I don't. You know, you, if I was CEO of Waystar, I mean, I mean, you, honey, are going to be something huge.
Yeah, sure. Like what?
I don't know, but we'll figure it out.
Yeah, that's for later on, down the road, whenever, just whenever.
Wow.
Shiv at the beginning.
Shiv's haircut is, I'm obsessed with her hair, I'm obsessed with her fashion, I'm obsessed with everything. I literally Google pictures of Shiv after I watch it. Like, I'm out of control.
She's quite she's so elegant and
her fashion, like,
powerful.
She wears pantsuits, like baggy pantsuits. She looks amazing. In the whole sequence where they were like on the cruise and she's wearing all these amazing, like, swimming outfits and hats and stuff, I was just like, oh, she's so wonderful. And then I was in my Google stalking, found out she was only 32, and I was really surprised. I think she's playing an older character. I'm not saying she looks older than 32. I think the character she's playing is older. Tom's certainly much older than that, the actor.
Oh yeah, that's true.
But god, she, this was her, like, the first probably 5 episodes of this were like her,
it's almost,
was her,
it's her season,
yeah.
In many ways, although ultimately Kendall is still the beating heart of this show.
Yeah, but the
I
first
think.
Couple of episodes when Kendall was just this empty shell, it was all about Shiv.
Yeah, she certainly came to the fore. So, all right, let's just get into it then. She's
She's the very early season one, the one who doesn't care about the company and is not trying to get in. Oh my god. She is just in the last season concerned with her career and that she's like a political advisor to a Democratic candidate. She's really separate from the business. And then basically it's wonderful. The power of the dad in one season, was it in the first episode?
No, it's like the second one. Anyway,
he basically tells her, like, you're next, you're going to be it. And she completely changes her entire life from that. It's unbelievable.
Yes. So but this just shows that, again, the split nature of Shiv. And this is why I think her politics are a show. She has constructed an identity for herself, which is based around I'm outside the business. I don't want any of that.
Because she was never invited in.
But that's exactly.
Yeah.
It's not in part. That's the entire reason for it.
Yeah.
She was made to feel outside and then wore that as a skin and constructed an identity around that, which is why I think her politics are bullshit. I don't think she ever, she's not left leaning. I don't think she's even political.
I actually disagree, because I think I think if she did get the position, I think she really would strive to clean the company up. And I think she would, like, I think when she met with that victim from the cruises, I think she was actually being really honest in what she was saying.
I don't know. I don't necessarily agree with that. I think she's smart. I think she's the most cutthroat of all the children.
No, she's not.
And I
not.
Think she's the most like her
Kendall's
father.
Kendall's the most cutthroat.
No, he's...
In the end, she couldn't sacrifice Tom. Kendall was willing to sacrifice his own dad twice, the end of season one as well.
Kendall isn't cutthroat. He does ultimately become the killer that Logan tells him he isn't. But let's not get into that. Okay, whatever. I think as soon as Shiv is offered it, as you say, she completely abandons everything that makes her, and is pursuing this and will throw Tom in the way, do anything to get this. And she becomes...
Well, I don't think she abandons everything that makes her, because I think from season one, as well as being the Democratic person and the left-leaning one of the family, she was still at every family event and every family scene. Like, her family is like what dominates her sense of self, I think. So I think that's still true for her in season two. And I think, it's fascinating watching what the dad's proposal did to her. I find that, like, just unbelievable to watch. Because to be told something like that,
yeah,
and then
she unravels.
It's so fucked up, because he's so awful, the dad. Like, he tells her that because she's the one who isn't looking for it, right? It's like the dad wants what he can't have. And then as soon as she's interested and she leaves her job and she's like, right, I'm ready to go, he's like, oh no.
Yeah, he pushes her away and away. But again, that's Logan's power playing people.
Yeah.
But also, Logan's a man who I think genuinely doesn't know. And he expresses that, and it's one of the rare bits of apparent honesty from Logan that I believe. I think he doesn't know. He's not.
Well,
he's unsure. That's why he's turning to Rhea.
I think he meant it, though, and then...
Yes, I think he did mean it in the moment.
He saw how quickly she unraveled with the power. Like that scene we mentioned when they're at that dinner table...
at the Pierce's house, and she blurts it out.
She can't. She
such
actually
a mistake.
Can't cope with the pressure. Like, and when Rhea dangles that very obvious carrot in front of her of trying to...
Can
take over the other company.
She falls for it like, instantly.
Like, what the dad actually, through all his disgusting mechanisms, proves is that Shiv is not capable of doing the job. Like, she's not ready for it.
You're right.
And she does that memo that everyone's taking the piss out of. Like, she goes about it all wrong. Because the thing, what's really interesting about Shiv is she's really cool, right? She's so cool. She's the coolest kid. Until she gets offered this, and then she falls apart at the seams.
Do you know what it reminded
me of? Fascinating to watch.
Do you remember that we both read this book, The Immortalists, which is about a group of kids who get told by a fortune teller the exact day.
Oh yeah, I forgot about
the date that they're each going to die.
Yeah.
And without no spoilers for that book, but
the day you're going to die turns out messes you up a bit.
Yeah, so knowing, having that information essentially changes the way you live your life.
Yeah.
And it's a similar thing. That one, knowing that was coming down the line for her, and even if she knew it was a few years away or whatever, it changed.
Well, immediately
how
she spoke to her boss, like, and this is where she was just hilarious. Like, she basically starts saying to the boss, he shakes hands with somebody in the street, and she's like, "Ooh, do you want some hand sanitizer?" And actually, the boss in himself is a really privileged guy anyway, but he's pretending to be, like, down with the kids. And he doesn't like when she says to him, but, like, do you actually want hand sanitizer when you're shaking a normal person's hand? And then she also basically says, yeah, well, you struck a deal with my dad, you're all over his new channels, like, you've no morals. And she just basically gets herself sacked because she thinks, oh, well, fine, I can go off to my job now. But the dad never said, like, quit your job tomorrow.
No, she was...
She blew it.
She was emboldened by some sort of imaginary bulletproof armor that doesn't exist, because basically anything Logan promises you is, you know, it's ethereal. It's not real, necessarily. Nothing is real until it actually happens.
And even with, like... And I think she's all show, because even with Tom, you know, she's like, oh, and if this open relationship, just because, like, effectively she wants to shag other people. And she's awful to Tom. And there's a scene where her and Tom go to dinner with Roman and his girlfriend. And her and Roman just are horrible to Tom. And it's like, would you speak to your... I would never speak to you like that in front of other people. Ha ha. Like, the way she's... It's so awful, just the constant belittling of Tom. And it takes him telling her 10 episodes in, well, 20 episodes in, that she makes him unhappy. And she's like, huh? Like, they all seem to be missing this kind of empathy.
They don't seem
to... Like, she seems surprised that Tom's unhappy.
But that,
it's
that's...
like, your marriage is horrible. Like, of course he's unhappy.
You're exactly right. And in it, that's a double date. And it's a relaxed situation in which people are themselves. And in that moment, Roman and Shiv relax back into themselves.
And that's what
they're
like.
That's their permanent state of being.
It's like with Shiv, like when Roman's like been through this hostage situation and he says, I want to talk about my feelings, and she's the one who starts going, I'm talking about my feelings. Like, she's horrible.
But that's
as well.
Because they're a product of the environment that their dad created for them, which you see in the opening credits every week. It's and it's them being played off against each other by an absent, sort of elusive and father who they were trained to yearn for affection.
All they do is try and score points.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
So that's all they're doing, and they apply the same to their own relationship.
She also treats Tom like he's really dumb. Like, you know when Tom does the we hear you thing, which to be fair was really bad.
We hear for you.
Oh, we hear for you. She's like, great job! And then kind of rolls her eyes behind his back. And again, like, that's not actually... Like, if she thought it was genuinely bad, she should tell him and have that conversation instead of, like, pretending like it's good to him and then kind of rolling her eyes at her brothers. You know what I mean? Like, she's a horrible wife.
That's the thing with Tom, though, Tom and her relationship. You're right. She knows deep down he's not right for that role and never was. And that's why she's so kind of willing to sacrifice him.
But she does try to get him. Like, she gets him. Like, she tries. Like, she gets him the head of ATN News. Like, that's a pretty good position to get your husband.
Look, in many ways, he's just part of the mask that she's adopted, I think, and the lifestyle. I think he's in many ways, he's just a trophy to her.
He must be something more. Like, I'd love to get to the bottom of their relationship. Like, he does give her something I think she doesn't get from other people. Like, she is at her most vulnerable scenes are with Tom. Like, even when she's telling him, like, she tells him before she tells anyone that the dad says it's her. And I really enjoyed the scene. It was about episode 4 or 5, I guess, where, you know, where Kendall, like, she's like, I don't know if she asked Kendall if he's okay, or, if, like, basically Kendall says, it's not going to be me, Shiv, and he just starts crying.
Oh, that's so tragic.
And even she couldn't really cope with that. Like, they can't cope with, like, any sort of emotions. And it was great watching her with her mother as well. I thought that was fascinating, watching just even how they interacted. The mom's like, oh, you finally come to visit. And Shiv's like, you've never invited us or whatever. Like, and the mom's like bartering to get them for Christmas, and she doesn't even like them or want them.
Yeah.
And they're grown children in their 30s and 40s. Like, you don't have a custody fight over who gets your 30-year-old children for Christmas.
But that's the mom's... The mom views the children in the same way that Logan does, as
assets.
Assets, yeah. Yes, exactly. They're collateral. And they can be... But they're tools as well that can be manipulated and employed to affect... He uses them all for different purposes and jobs throughout the season.
It's impossible to talk about any of the characters without talking about Logan. But also, I just... Watching
Shiv
unravel...
He's the one who hangs over all the characters, and he's responsible for who they are.
Watching Shiv unravel was just a joy. Like, she's some actress.
Oh, Sarah Snook.
Oh, my God. Do you know, I was looking her up.
She's Australian, right?
She's Australian. I was looking her up. She was actually the... She was the... What was that Ethan Hawke movie? Like... The time travelling, and he'd like a scarred face. I don't want to give away any plot points. Predestination. She's the girl in Predestination.
Oh, go wait. That's amazing.
Because I was IMDb stalking her the night, my obsession.
That was a really interesting movie.
But, like, she's some actress, like, when she... She's so good, right, at, like, in that scene on the dinner table, and she goes, for fuck's sake, Dad, just tell them it's me, with complete confidence.
Yeah.
And within 0.5 seconds, her face just starts to crumble when she realises the reaction around the table. Actually, like, to the nuance of these performances is just incredible. I don't know how, like, what a joy to be an actor on this show.
She's particularly good.
She's so, like, she does that mix of confidence and vulnerability that they all have. Because they're, like, so privileged and, like, just embodied with this confidence from birth. But then they're so insecure at the same time.
Yes.
And she's just perfect. So good at doing it. I love it.
All right, but, any, you know, final notes on Shiv?
Yeah, like, she does fix some stuff from them. And she says, oh, you want the woman's touch. But, like, she does fix that witness. Like, she's the only one who could have managed that.
Yeah. Oh, no. She's more than capable in so many ways.
Like, and she really in like, that, is in good that for instance, the family.
But also in the moment with you mentioned earlier with the three of them are on stage at the conference.
She shines. She really shines. And she talks about her dad as a dinosaur when she's getting too cocky and he's not impressed at all.
Yeah.
But also, I want to briefly talk about her dynamic with Raina because I really enjoyed it.
Raya.
She was the first to see that Raya was a threat.
Yes.
Like, and again,
and she's the one who dispatches with her.
It's the female eye, I guess, because the brother's like, oh yeah, Raya's just someone dad shagging, basically. And she's like, no, Raya's a huge threat. And then basically what I loved is that when it came down to it and the dad's like, I can't decide who to say is next, and she knows the Cruises scandal is coming, she's like, trust your heart, Dad. Go with Raya.
She plays the dad very well.
Yeah, so she could have grabbed it in that moment. Like, he was really thinking, oh, I could give it to her. And also, I loved, you know the way we never see the siblings working together? I loved the scene at the dad's, they called it like his funeral or whatever. The scene in Scotland where, like, they all gang up on Raya at the same time.
Yeah.
And Shiv orchestrates it. So Shiv's like, oh, Raya never drinks. And Shiv knows that's the one thing that will get to her dad. Because later on, everything else that happened, the dad goes, I thought she liked to drink.
Yeah.
And then Kendall says, ooh, mention his sister. Or Con says something. And Roman says something. And it's like, oh, those four kids. Imagine being their babysitter when they were younger. Like, if they all collude, they are horrific. And I want to see more of that because I really enjoyed watching them act together.
Yeah, they have such a wonderful dynamic when it's just the four of them in a room together, or even just the three plus Con.
I loved all the stuff, but I thought she did it was so good. Everything she did there was just amazing.
All right.
What a role, like.
Let's move on. Two left. Let's talk about Logan.
How much is a gallon of milk?
What?
How much is a gallon of milk?
I don't know. I mean, who the fuck knows, Dad? Literally, no one knows. Who gives a shit?
Ray!
Yeah?
How much is a gallon of milk?
A regular milk, or...
I am surrounded by snakes and fucking morons! You're a bunch of silk-stalking fucks! Who backs me on Pierce? Who?
None of them do, Dad. They're all against it. Okay? Carl's lying. Ray's lying. Jerry's playing both sides.
Well, here's news. We are going after it. And what's more, I will win.
He just dominates the whole show.
He really
Every
does.
Scene, even the scenes he's not in.
What's interesting with Logan is that I feel like in the show never makes him a sort of a point of view character as such. You know, you're really following the kids.
Yeah.
And Logan is just this, as you said, this powerful black cloud over all of their lives. But you do get a few insights into Logan, and they humanize Logan in many, and for who is essentially the villain. Like the
Logan's
moment,
so awful, and yet
he's seductive.
He seduces. Yeah, I'm watching him, and I love him sometimes.
As an audience, yeah, you're just he's like Brian Cox is just this vortex. Like you're just all attention in the room on screen, but also as the audience, you're just like gripped by this man,
yeah,
who holds this, like he holds a room and a country and a planet in his grip.
And I do think part of his attraction is his volatility, because I've had bosses kind of like that in the past, when they can be really awful or really full of praise, and you don't know where you're going to fall in between that. It's awful, but it's like when they praise you, you value it more than if a normal nice person praises you.
Yeah.
Because you know you could be at the other end of it.
It creates a desire. It makes it desirable. But it's also
so scary.
But again, what you've described is an abusive relationship.
Exactly.
And he has an abusive relationship
with everyone in his life.
But also,
but he's also like, you have to, like when you think about it, you forget, because we're watching him, you know, whatever. He's been at the center of his own universe for so long, and he's been so rich for so long, and he's been running this company for so long, that he's
alone.
He's just like, but he just has no perspective outside of his own wants and needs.
Yes.
And even again, that weekend we mentioned where the whole family unravels very visibly, he can't control himself. Like, he's at a table of people who are questioning his treatment of women and the place of women in his corporation, and he A, cannot tell them that Shiv is going to succeed him, even though he knows that would get him the deal. And B, he screams at his wife over the dinner table. Like, he completely lost it.
Yeah.
And that surprised me. I thought, I would have thought Logan could rein himself in. And he can't even do that, because he's so used to throwing money at problems. Like, that's his solution to everything, is to throw money at it. And when money wasn't working, he just did not know what to do.
Yeah, you're so right. But he's filled with rage as well, because when money
so
does
angry.
Finally fail him, in that moment where is it Alison Pierce, the head of the Pierce family, walks away at the conference and tells him she'll never give him the company.
Oh God,
he just
loses it.
Runs down the road screaming at her, and
he's banging on her car like he's so out of control. And that's what's really scary about him. He's a bit like a wild beast, and we know part of the reason it's kind of twofold. He wants the company so much because he believes it will save his company, but B, he really
he wants it
because of his brother Ewan. Because
yeah.
They said it's Ewan's favourite news channel.
Oh, you're right.
Like, there's a relationship with his brother, like, is terrifying.
But that's what, okay, everything that we've said, that the result of who the kids are is because of Logan. And whatever happened to Logan and his brother is a result of their upbringing. And I love that they'd never call it out or tell us about it again. You don't get the backstory. You don't get the episode.
But you get that wonderful moment where they go to the house that he clearly told his children he grew up in a shack where he used to like piss out in the garden and stuff. And then the children go to his childhood home.
Yeah, and it's like a normal three-bed semi-detached.
We're like, we wish we owned that house. Like, that is a nice house. And then, but he can't get out of the car.
Yes. Oh, he is crippled.
So it's like, what dark things happened in that home? But
and
to
also
him,
what
when
happened
he remembers
to his sister?
Oh my God, I know. But when he remembers that house, I think he really does remember it as a shack. Like, he's not exaggerating.
Well, it's an interesting thing.
Weird.
Yeah, because he clearly has
he's
not
so rich,
been back there in a long time. And what's interesting is that I thought Brian Cox was particularly excellent in that episode. He's this sort of ball of nostalgia and sort of fear and repressed memories resurging, and also a man who's uncomfortable with praise and surprises. And I love that, again, it's an example of the Rhea getting it so wrong by throwing him a surprise party.
No,
like,
but then
she doesn't
kind
know
of
him.
Pleased. Like, I think
no, but he wasn't. That's him quickly adopting.
Yeah, he left and then came back again.
His need for control, and he just had to endure that.
But I love that the kids knew he'd hate it, and they're just so pleased that Rhea is doing all this
yes,
stuff wrong.
Yeah, 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 yeah.
And then at the end of it all, he goes, "She had whiskey with me. She told me she liked to drink." So good. But also, like, his relationship with his wife is so interesting, because here him and Rhea start like shagging in the season, which we never really see. But But the wife seems to know about it. And it appears that it's not unusual for him to cheat on the wife. We picked that up. But what I absolutely loved is when the wife grabs Rhea, and Rhea's trying to be all polite to her, and the wife says, oh, do you get STD checks? Because like, Logan and I still make love too. And she's all smiles, and Rhea's just like, oh my God, like, it's the most uncomfortable conversation. And, like, basically the wife's being so clever because she's letting her know, I know what you're up to. Don't care about it. And FYI, we still shag too.
I know. She took it. It's the wife taking a position of weakness and turning it into a position of power somehow.
The wife was great because I keep calling her the wife. I'm sorry. I cannot remember her name. She doesn't care that he's sleeping with Rhea, basically. But when he makes Rhea his successor, she's like, I'm done with you. Like, you did not tell me you were doing this. And she's gone then. And I'm like, fair play, because she knows that, like, it's one thing that he's having these affairs, which he clearly does all the time, but she knows for him to give somebody power in his business,
that's something more.
Yeah.
It's not a sexual relationship. It was a business relationship.
I don't know why he gave it to Rhea, though. I didn't quite understand her seduction of him. Like, I don't know why he fell for it. Like, he seemed too smart for it.
It is perhaps one of the show's minor failings. I'm not wholly convinced by how that happened. But however, they did spend a lot of time at it. She shows up, you know, first in episode 4 in that safe room episode, and then she is kind of a mixture of also being seduced by him and the power, but also playing her own game.
And she comes from this so-called respectable family, and I think part of maybe the appeal for him is that that's the family he hates so much, so he would have been pleased to get one of them and make her his CEO.
Yeah.
And he obviously just says, like, none of his kids are ready to do it, but he knows he needs to announce a successor. But yeah, so I enjoyed all that stuff with him and Rhea and his wife as well.
But ultimately, what's interesting is that she got seduced by it, got a bit too close to it all, and then as soon as she realised what the company actually, the beating heart of that company and the scandals and the darkness within both the company and Logan, she backs out. Like, even her, this basically someone who is ultimately just a cutthroat, who will swap allegiances whenever it suits her, you know.
It's too dark, like the cruises stuff, and this is what we need to talk about, like the stuff they're covering up in the cruises. And again, it's very interestingly done because they're our protagonists, and to some extent we're rooting for them.
I'm never rooting for them.
No, I mean,
I'm rooting for them in their internal power plays.
Yeah.
But, like, externally, I'm rooting for the congressional hearing. Like, I want them to be picked apart.
But so do I. But them and Kendall does this amazing speech. I'm like, yes, Kendall!
Yeah, I know.
But the stuff that they were covering up, like, people were being murdered and abused on these cruises. And Logan, at the very end, and I think this is when Kendall realised that his dad knew all along. Because his dad says, not a real person.
Yes.
And that was the acronym.
That's the most important line, I think, in this whole series.
They call them NRPs, not real people. If you die and you're undocumented, they'll just throw you off the edge of a cruise. And that is like, holy shit. And that is something, I think, that none of the kids would have ever gone for, but Logan was quite happy to cover up.
But it also, the show is implying in that moment that, Logan knew about all of this from the start, but also that phrase came from him.
Yeah.
Like, he's the one who's not only
care.
He's actively covering it up and actively did nothing about it and was friends with Uncle Mo, that, you know, as they say, that nickname, they knew about all this
and
they
it's not
did
like,
not care.
What I find fascinating about it is, okay, when Kendall accidentally murders someone, Logan kind of jumps in and covers it up, right, as his dad, and to some extent you can understand that.
No, he didn't do it as a dad.
I'm saying it was a one-time thing.
He did it to get leverage.
But also he would not he does not want a scandal of his son fucking murdering someone at his
No, fine.
His
I'm
wedding.
Just I'm being no, semantic, but he didn't do it as a father protecting
point,
his son.
My
is
point
I mean.
Is that's a one-time thing. You understand there's multiple reasons why he did it.
Yeah.
The crew stuff went on for years, so it's not like, again, you might understand if it happened once, Logan covers it up and then gets rid of all the perpetrators. It's like the Catholic Church. They just kept letting it happen over and over again. The abuse of children in the Catholic Church. And in this instance, he knew that Mo was molesting people, hence the name. He knew that people were being killed on the cruises. He knew undocumented migrant workers were being abused. And he did not care. And it appears it went on for decades. We don't quite get a timeline.
Yeah.
And that's the really, really, really dark side of it. And he's the one who's like, oh, they're not real people. It doesn't matter.
Yeah. It's him. That moment is the reveal of the true, like, Logan is not just the head of a company that got out of control. He is literally the malign influence
behind everything.
He is. But he allowed that situation to happen, fostered those, you know, the relationships he has with his family are the relationships he has with his employees. We see Frank and Jerry and Carl. They're all sycophants who are both in love with and in awe and in fear of him. It's the same. He applies the same relationships to everybody.
And he's so dark, like that bore in the floor stuff. That's all Logan. Like, he comes in and does that to a room of people. He's sick. He's getting, like, perverse enjoyment from that stuff.
And while the whole time downplaying it, it's just a game.
Yeah.
Play the game on the floor.
He's such a good character.
He's terrifying.
Yeah.
He's a terrifying presence.
I think what I like about Succession is, though, it's such a good mix. It's not just him. Because, again, I think a whole series where Logan was... Sorry, now it's very busy, the road we're on. A whole season where Logan is the main character, or where Roman is the main character, specifically those two, I wouldn't be able to watch it. And without the comedic elements, it would just be horrible.
It would just be all darkness and cynicism.
Yeah.
I mean, you do get... But that's what you get, glimpses of sort of satirical ridiculousness and humanity from the other characters, for sure. Well, let's move on then. Let's move on to where the real humanity is, which is Kendall, who for me is...
Can we take a break? I need to take a break and we come back to Kendall, because I've just realised Oscar's woken up from his nap.
Okay, we'll come back.
Oscar, fair play, you did very well.
We'll come back in a minute. Okay.
For a long Succession discussion. We will be back later, probably from our sofa.
Okay, bye.
Bye.
L to the OG. Dude be the OG. And he playing like a pro. See? L to the OG. Dude be the OG. And he playing like a pro, make some noise. A1 ratings, 80k wine, never gonna stop, baby, fuck Father Time, bro. Don't get it twisted, I've been through hell, but since I stand dad, I'm alive and well. Shaper of views, creator of news, father of many, paid all his dues. So don't try to run your mouth at the king, just pucker up, bitch, and go kiss the ring. L to the OG, do be the OG, A-N, he playing. Make some noise!
Hi, we're back. Moments have passed for you, but several hours and a lifetime have passed for us, because that is the day of in the life of a parent. Right, let's try and pick it up again, because I think we're like an
my
hour
daddy's
and
number one boy.
Daddy's number one boy. Right.
I think we can. To talk about Kendall, we need to talk about where he finished up in the last season, though.
Okay, go.
So it's very much his descent into drug addiction. So he is sober at the start of season one. And then he's got a serious cocaine problem, which he's getting back on towards the end of season one. And he is, possibly because he's socializing with Stewie again or whatever, but he is really plotting to bring his dad down, right, and like fuck the company. So Kendall is being pretty naughty at the end of season one. And then at Shiv's wedding, when he's about to do this amazing, you know, for him thing and like kick the dad out and get the company and all the rest of it, he decides to ask a young waiter to get him coke, and then they do loads of coke together, and then they go off in the waiter's car, and then they drive into the water. I don't know which one of them's driving, I can't remember. And Kendall just leaves him.
The waiter is.
Kendall just leaves the scene of the crime and basically comes back. And it kind of says all we need to know about Kendall, really. Like, he's a complete fuck up at the end of season one.
I think he did something that any of us are capable of doing.
In the space of one evening, you're trying to take down your dad's empire. You leave someone that you don't even know if they're dead or not.
I've been trying to take down my dad's empire for years.
Like, we find out in season two that, like, the kid wasn't even dead when Kendall left him.
No, hang on. Don't get me wrong. I'm not forgiving it.
Yeah.
I'm just saying...
It's just we forget because we love Kendall so much.
Yeah, but he's also not a cold-blooded killer.
No, and he really suffers morally with it.
Yes.
But I'm saying...
He's a human who did a horrible thing, an unconscionable mistake that he's... is paying for every day of season two.
Yeah, but he's not paying for it, really. He's living in luxury and, like, feeling sad for himself. Like,
but that's, Kathy, depends on your definition. Means nothing. We've already covered this. That means nothing to those people.
But, David, what's your definition
of comfort?
What's your definition of justice? Do you think causing a young man's death and fleeing the scene of a crime, paying for it,
I'm not saying any justice has been served.
Yeah, okay, good.
Hang on. Because
you're saying that Kendall's paying for it. I would say he isn't.
He is paying for it internally. I'm not saying
internally,
that's fair.
He's sad, sure.
Kathy, I'm not saying that's fair. Don't get me wrong. I'm not saying, hey, justice has been served. Let bygones be bygones.
Kendall went on a spa and it got ended abruptly before he got to meditate.
You're twisting my words. You're twisting my words. All I'm saying is that
I'm not twisting your words. You said Kendall's
paying for it.
He has not
got off scot-free. You don't walk away from something like that and
get off
scot-free.
By the end of the season, he doesn't care. He really cares at the start of the season.
Okay, that's also not true. I really disagree with you.
Anyway, I caveat all this with Kendall's
at the end of this. Sorry,
Dave.
Let me say.
You're going to wake us.
At the end of this season, he has gone through the cycles of grief, essentially, and he's gone through acceptance of what he's done, and is starting to, by the last few episodes, regain a sense of self. To the point where, so for the first 7 episodes, he's basically an automaton.
He's so great. Come on, let's go back to the beginning.
This is me talking about him and his journey.
Okay.
And then by the end, he's standing up in front of a crowd and singing L to the OG.
That was
which
my
is basically
thing.
Old
L
Kendall
to the
back.
OG.
As you said. So he does come full circle, and he's someone who was reinvigorated by Naomi. In the Naomi Pierce, and I thought a brilliant burgeoning relationship, and I loved the scene with them in the helicopter. And he's someone who has regained his life, and then it's all taken away from him again by his dad.
But can we go back to the start of the season, though? We're skipping way too far ahead.
Yeah,
go on. I know we've talked about what amazing actors they all are, but the actor who plays Kendall is the absolute star of the show, isn't he?
Jeremy Strong.
Oh my God, he's just incredible. Like, what he can do, he like you said at the start of the season, he's like slow walking through water. Like, he's not really reacting to anything around him. He can barely speak. He's like his dad's lapdog. He's so upset about what happened, and it's quite brilliant to watch that and then him kind of slowly evolving throughout the season to come out of that. But he just plays that broken man so amazingly, and it's what I love about Kendall. Like all of them have this, but like Kendall can feel really touching where Roman and Shiv never can. Like we always root for Kendall, even though we know he's so flawed. And like in season one,
he kind of is our protagonist.
He is
somehow.
Even in season one, like we were always kind of rooting for him. Like, we did want him to take Logan down, but then when he was all like coked up, and like, do you remember there was a scene in season one where he was like trying to buy this kind of young hip art or something, and he just walks in his like trainers and like puts his feet up on the desk and starts talking shit to these two young women.
Yeah.
And like, he's just awful. And so he can be as awful as the rest of them as well, but it's generally when he's on drugs. It's like he's quite fascinating to watch.
But it's also not just that. He, as with the rest of them, is a product of his environment.
Yeah.
And he's as out of touch with reality and the common person as any of them.
Yeah, he's just the most seemingly in touch. But he's so clever. Like, of all of them, I think he is the best businessman. Like, some of the scenes, the business scenes he does, he's really
but
clever.
That's the thing. Even when he's working on autopilot and he's checked out emotionally and he's basically not even connected to reality, it's almost like his subconscious, his lizard brain kicks in, and he's just got these natural killer business instincts.
But he's the only one who actually, we get the impression in season one, like, he's worked in the company for a really long time.
Yeah, he just knows the stuff.
Like, Roman never did anything until season two, end of season one, really. He was kind of a token, and Shiv never worked in the company. Whereas
he's
Kendall,
done the work.
Like, Kendall should have succeeded his dad in the pilot. Like, that's where it all went wrong for him.
Yeah.
But it's fascinating, even with Kendall, like, he has in season one, like, he has an ex-wife that he's trying to get back together with, and he has kids that he's trying to have a relationship with, but he's just over them.
We don't see at all in this season.
We see this one scene where they're in a theme park and he's there with his kids,
oh,
he's closed it down
right,
for their birthday.
Yeah.
But yeah, he's kind of given all that up, and he's just fully embraced his drug addiction now. Like, he's not trying to fight it at all, whereas in season one he was trying to be sober.
But I guess if you're
it's
in
really
that,
sad.
excuse me, if you're in that
spiral of depression after experiencing something that's as traumatic as that. That
as
he,
you murdering someone.
No, no, but yeah, but he, it's still traumatic.
Yeah.
And again, like, I know it seems to sound like I'm forgiving him for
not.
Murder. I'm not. But also, it's not murder. It's negligent homicide.
Which, someone's been watching too much CSI.
Like, I'm also like, don't. I'm not forgiving him, but also it sounded like I'm
It's only negligent homicide, right? And he's really upset about
Look,
it.
No real person was involved, right? Where
and
we
then there's the scene, like, so it's kind of Kendall trying to come to terms with it, and the dad is like, seems genuinely concerned about Kendall's mental health at the start of this series, doesn't he? Like, the dad seems very worried about him. But then,
yeah, but I don't buy any human emotion from Logan Roy. I think it's all business.
Well, because
he's
when
concerned because it will unravel him.
When they're going back to the UK, Kendall's like, I can't go back there, and the dad's like, you're coming with me, and then the dad's like, you're driving to the house of the bereaved parents with me, and
he's torturing him.
He makes Kendall come into the house, and again, part of me is like, Logan's awful, and part of me is like, well, Kendall fucking deserves it. But like, the whole sequence just had me so upset for Kendall, because in that moment, Kendall's our protagonist.
But that's proof to me that Logan is at no stage doing any of this as a father protecting their
son.
Yeah,
it really shocked me.
He's a CEO leveraging an employee and twisting the knife whenever he can for no reason.
And then when Kendall...
Or, no, for the reason to benefit himself. He's a selfish person.
And got really drunk and tried to post money through their letterbox.
Oh, it's tragic.
And then he tried to tell his mom and his mom wouldn't listen. And you are just like, do you know what, Kendall? You're so privileged and rich and like, I loathe everything about you. But actually in this scene, because the actor's so amazing, your heart's breaking for him.
Yeah.
That's what makes him such a fascinating character. And then as the season progresses, he starts to get some of his confidence back. And I mean, I think he's really back when we mentioned it already, but at the congressional hearings, when Kendall speaks, he's amazing.
Yeah.
Like, he's so on it. Like, he understands all the questions. He's like throwing them back at Shiv's old boss. And he's like saying, you know, like, basically, we're not commies or whatever he's saying. Like,
he's definitely... back on form then. But I think it's the episode before that in Dundee when he really comes to life.
When
again.
He does L to the OG.
But also the way he's just acting around that young actress, like someone in the throes of passion.
Oh my God, I really enjoy that. Because
he's living life again.
We're so used to, again, like used to liking Kendall. And like, he decides he's in love with this actress, right? Sweeps her away from the play, even though his brother's like, please don't do that. She's actually the star of the play. And he sweeps her and he's like obsessed with her and he's like basically in love with her. And then he's like, I can't wait for you to meet my dad. And he's like a puppy dog. And then as soon as she meets the dad and he realizes the dad doesn't like her, he turns to one of his lackeys and says, get rid of her.
Yeah, and doesn't even say goodbye.
And that's when I was like, oh, the old Kendall's really back now, because that's horrible what he's just done.
No, actually, I think that's a mix of the old and new Kendall. Because the old Kendall was doing everything he could to undermine his dad because he didn't align with his vision or anything. So that's actually, he's not fully back at that stage because he's still like living under the dad's shadow. He's completely owned by the dad, which he actually hadn't been previously. Maybe he was in his childhood. But as we knew Kendall in season one, it was dad doesn't know what he's doing. Dad shouldn't be running this company. He was out to get him.
Yeah.
So actually the Kendall that we know from season one isn't really fully back until the very final scene of episode
10. And it's that funny thing, because I think he feels incredibly grateful to his dad for cleaning up the mess in Scotland. And also his dad's the only one who knows about it. So he feels like really indebted to his dad, and he feels like, because he wants to talk to other people about it but he can't. And you're my number one boy, and everyone was taking the piss out of that on Twitter, but like that for Kendall. And when the dad's like, you're my number one boy, and he's hugging him, like, to Kendall, as like the only nice thing that's happened to him in so long.
But it's also Logan knows exactly what he wants to hear.
Yeah,
it's Logan is not saying that because he believes it. He's saying it because Kendall needs to hear it.
Yeah, and Logan knew that he'd stop the deal, like the deal happening, to lose his empire.
Exactly.
And that's why it's funny at the end of the season. I mean, the blood sacrifice stuff is just so epic and amazing when the dad announces he's going to sacrifice Kendall. But a part of me was like, well, do you know what, Kendall? You were going to sacrifice your dad at the end of the last season. You know, you've not exactly been a faithful servant. Like, I mean, Kendall kind of had it coming.
Yeah, but this is... No.
In this world, I don't agree. In reality, the dad should be doing that to Kendall. But Kendall is the one who's been in the company longest, was actually in charge at some point when the cruise cover-up was happening, and in the previous season tried to take the company off his dad. So from the dad's perspective, it's like, of course you'd do Kendall over Shiv or Roman. If you're thinking along the lines of which one of my three kids will I blood sacrifice.
Fine, but like the dad, like Logan at the beginning of that episode, at the beginning of that episode, was explicitly told by the shareholders that they want him to go, which he never tells.
Logan would never do that.
Like. He never tells anybody.
He half-heartedly says like, "Oh, maybe it should be," and everyone's like, "Oh no, it shouldn't be you." Yeah. But yeah, that like Dave saw
now,
coming.
I have to address some fan theories that are going around online.
Ooh,
which
I haven't heard any.
I don't agree with. A lot of people are theorizing that Logan is in on this, and that Kendall is still his lapdog, and that Logan is turning himself in, but in a way that doesn't, like, he's respecting the shareholders' wishes, but by not just handing in the reins, and that Kendall is acting on his back.
No, because it gets way more press attention to do it this way than to just do your own mea culpa.
Also, I don't buy any of the motivation for that. It also doesn't make none of the scenes in the final season episode would even make sense then, with him telling him it needs to be you.
Yeah, we saw their whole conversation,
and also it just undermines Kendall's entire journey through this whole season, which is him becoming. I think that theory frustrating.
I don't think I agree with that theory, but I think people are picking up on the fact that in the final scene when Brian Cox watches Kendall.
Oh, he smiles.
He smiles because he's proud.
Yeah, he's got the killer instinct.
Yeah, because he's like, none of my kids have the killer instinct. That's his whole thing.
He's proud, exactly. But that's thematically, that's a way more interesting way to end the thing on than some silly plot twist where he's in on it and that's why he's smiling. I think people are completely
like, there's no way the dad's in on it. He spent the last five episodes trying to cover up the cruise thing. Like.
No, and also for the sake of season three, what's more interesting that we get some rug pull that it was like Logan and Kendall were working together the whole time. Oh my god, it's genius. Or is it better to just have Kendall and Logan actually at loggerheads, which is what we want, let's face it.
It's fascinating as well because they've really come around from season one, because season one was that, you know, conflict. Season two, Kendall's been his lapdog. Now season three, it's like, where is it going to go? Because actually, the dad does, it depends how dark the dad wants to go, but like, he knows every detail of Kendall's crime and they've covered the whole thing up. Yeah. I don't think the dad would implicate himself, but then you never know. Maybe he would.
That card's going to get played.
Yeah.
He'll play that card.
I think so too.
For sure.
It's like,
I'm so excited for it. But yeah, that moment was one of the best television
moments.
But
Dave saw it coming because Kendall still looked like a hangdog walking into the press conference, and Dave's like, he's going to do something. And I was like, I don't think so. I think he's just going to take it. And then it was just so epic.
No, I just felt the momentum of the show building up to it. It was like close to the end. What were they going to finish it on? And there's no.
I wish I hadn't watched it with you.
You're just waiting for Kendall to wake up.
I wish I was watching it on my own because I didn't see it coming. And obviously you didn't spoil it for me because you were just theorizing as we watched it. But I wished I'd had that moment because I wasn't thinking, because as soon as you said it I was like, oh yeah, that makes sense. But I would have loved to just be sitting there watching it and be completely shocked by Kendall.
But also I think I spotted it when Logan said that line, which is so vitally important, when he referred to the man that Kendall is responsible for his death, the waiter, as no real person involved.
Yeah.
And we've already covered that and how that links to Logan and the cruises and everything. But that for Kendall, that's the breaking point. And that's where I think
Kendall's obsessed with that kid.
Yes. And so it basically undermined everything that Kendall had experienced from his dad, as in terms of him helping him to cover it up. He realizes that his dad never saw it as a crime at all the whole time. It also belittles the way that Kendall is feeling, because Kendall is feeling that he is responsible for another human being's death, which he is, because he is a human being with feelings. So he then acknowledges that his dad is lacking that.
I mean, it's terrifying.
He's responsible for the entire cruises thing, which Kendall has also been shocked by. He's one of the few people who were saying, like, we need to clean this up, this is disgusting. And I genuinely don't think Kendall was aware of any of that.
But he was overseeing the company at the time as COO.
Yes, he's technically responsible, but Tom was aware, Greg, Logan clearly aware.
It seems like...
I don't think Kendall was aware.
Yeah, but Kendall definitely knew the molester thing, though. They all knew something or other was going on.
True.
The other line in that scene that
Kendall's
I think,
no saint.
The other line in that scene that I think drove Kendall to his ultimate act of blood sacrifice betrayal was when he said to his dad, could it have been me? And the dad said, no, because you're not a killer.
Yeah.
And I think that tipped... I think that plus the no real person thing is what flipped Kendall, because for him, it's like that thing of always wanting his dad's approval, and also he really wants to be the head of the company, and as we said, he's finally awakened and come back to himself a bit here. He's like, well, fuck you, I am a killer, and fuck you, he was a real person and you did it all. Yeah. And why would I take the blame? And I think the dad really should have handled that scene a bit better. Imagine just being on set of that show and just watching those actors.
The dad, Logan thought he had a better... He thought he had a grip on Kendall, because Kendall essentially was his lapdog for nine episodes.
And he didn't offer Kendall anything, you know? Like, if I'm going to ask someone to go to prison for me, I think I'd offer them something and probably not say, you're not a killer and you killed, like, not a real person. The irony, of course, being that Kendall is the only killer in the room that we know about.
It's so fun to laugh at these people.
It's awful. It's just like, I find this show so fascinating, what it does to me morally, because I'm, like, rooting for these people. And at the same time, I'm, like, completely repulsed and, like, find them just disgusting. They're so privileged. They're so wealthy. They're so self-absorbed and self-obsessed. Like, they all have positions of power where they could be doing good things for the world and none of them do it.
That's exactly right. And that's why it's sort of a meta commentary from this show about how we as a society view rich people, because we do revere them as, you know, the Kardashians and influencers, Donald Trump. We obsess.
You're using we as a society here. You're not saying me and you idolize.
No,
the
I am.
Trumps
sorry. It's the royal we.
Yeah.
No, I have no time for any of those people. But society is obsessed with rich people. It is. It idolizes them. There's hundreds of TV shows, fictional and otherwise, about rich people. It's a dichotomy. We're also quite aware that there's a huge class divide, and that there's 99% of the world's wealth is owned by 1% of the people. So it's... And we know they are responsible for some of the world's biggest crimes. So,
well, we know, like, it's fascinating, like, watching people like this, like the news outlet, like they're running in a million years, we wouldn't ever dream of watching Fox News. And so much of this is actually is very much nodding to the Murdoch stuff of how, like, Rupert Murdoch and the phone scandal, and how one of the sons was, like, taking blame for it and all that kind of stuff. Like, there's a lot of Murdoch references in this. But yeah, it's just that fascinating. It's such... I think one of the reasons we enjoy it, why it feels like such escapism, even though it has such heavy topics, is because of that otherworldly sense of their wealth. Just means that, like, it doesn't even feel like we're watching human beings.
Yeah.
Because it's so absurd to be that rich. And they're so disgusting. Like there's even scenes earlier on in the season where... like, they have houses everywhere, right, by the way. So remember, for the dad's party, Shiv gives him a picture of all the houses they own and he doesn't even recognise them. She gives him a picture book. But there's a very early on scene where they go to the Hamptons or somewhere where, of course, they have a mansion. There's, like, a bird in the chimney, or a fox in the chimney And the dad basically...
Those dead raccoons, wasn't it?
Yeah, the dad decides that the contractor did it with no evidence, and basically, like, refuses to pay the guy, like, 150 grand that he owes him, which is, like, would put someone out of business. And then we see all the opulence of, there's, like, must be 20 waitresses and waiters and chefs and all this food that's brought in. And then the dad's like, throw it all in the bin and get me pizza. And they're the moments where you're like, oh my God, you can kind of forget the wealth. And then you see those scenes and you're like, this is disgusting. Yeah. Like,
carbon footprint.
Oh, it's obscene. Helicopters everywhere, airplanes everywhere. It's like that, you know, the way you, like, we always work really hard to be, like, you know, not use plastic and, like, bring our own coffee cups to coffee shops and, like, you know, rinse out our yogurt pots before we recycle them. And then it's like, you know, most of the damage in the world is being caused environmentally by, like, 100 companies or whatever. It's just like even when they all went to Italy for their holiday, they're all getting like separate private jets. Like they don't even all get on the same private jet. Yeah. And then helicopter pads and like, it just, it's mad, the wealth. But they do it well because really, really rich people don't really observe or talk about their wealth, and the characters are never talking about it.
It's just background yeah. to them.
The only one who's worried about the wealth is Khan.
Yeah, but he has reason to be because he's made some very.
I just don't understand. I need to see this play.
Okay, let's wrap it up. Yeah. Did you want to talk? You wanted to talk about the music for a minute?
Oh, I just wanted to talk about it. Awesome.
Clearly,
music
is. It is the greatest soundtrack in the world,
and it won an Emmy this year.
Are amazing. The theme music is amazing, but also the way he layers in. I read an interview with the guy. God, I've forgotten his name, but he wanted to merge classical music and hip hop.
So good.
And this sort of fusion of. The opulence to express the opulence that they have, but also the sort of, I think in particular Kendall's sort of young, hungry sort of nature, and
they often do a lot with them. Obviously, like the main music is like piano, but then they do loads of violin stuff as well, and they're like ratcheting up the tension.
Beautiful and it's catchy, so and orchestral and opulent, and it's one of the finest soundtracks I've ever heard.
Yeah, it's incredible. And it works me in, like, I'm in a frenzy when I hear that music. Like, I had to skip the credits some nights because it was like, I can't watch this before bed. Like, and then you'd be lying in bed.
It's exciting, isn't it?
And the music's just going. It's not as bad this season, though, or last season, because we binged it. And, like, I couldn't sleep for weeks because the bloody music going through my head. It's slightly better this time. And everyone's gone mad on the internet about it, like, remixing it and doing different versions of it. And, like, it's so funny. So, yeah, I think the music is just something to behold, and it just adds that layer of opulence to it, as you said. It just feels so indulgent, the music. Like, how can music be this wonderful on a TV show? It's so good.
Yeah, let's finish up by saying again.
Clearly, we're obsessed.
I am obsessed. Yeah, we're both obsessed. I just think this is the best show on television right now by a long margin.
Yeah, we're going to do our TV roundup next week of all the stuff we're watching, but there's a couple of new dramas I started watching, and I'm just like, I can't. Like, after Succession,
nothing is coming close. Yeah. Because it's one of those things where it's a creator and writers and. Music and directors and acting, it's like there's not a single chink in any of the armor here.
No.
This is just, it's a production that is just flawless from beginning to end.
And I really do believe that.
It's a singular vision that came out, like season one of this, just knew exactly what
everything
it was doing.
Everything has it.
And amazing.
But do you feel like, I think the reason that it's most powerful in the end though is because it is that family drama and the dynamic of a family, because that's always the most interesting.
Yeah.
Like, what's fascinating here, as we've talked about extensively, is like what Logan will do to his children, what they will do to their siblings, what they will do to their spouses. That's what's so shocking about it. If you're just watching a scene with a CEO and his staff, it just does not pack that punch as to watch somebody do what, like, Logan's trying to do to Kendall at the end of the season.
It's both of those things.
It's both of those things. Yeah. And also to have, you know, as we said, the little hints of, like, their really dark childhood and, like, there's such the love-hate relationships they all have with each other. And that's what keeps it really compelling at its core, I think. And that's why the best scenes are the ones with, as we said, like three or four of the kids and the dad are the best scenes.
You're right. It's epic Greek tragedy kind of stuff.
It's like Shakespearean.
And even Logan references an old Greek text about blood sacrifice.
Yeah.
In the last episode. So that, you know, that's not a coincidence.
No. No, I think nothing in the show is a coincidence. It's all very, very cleverly constructed. Can't wait to watch season three.
Okay. Right. Let us know. I think this is the longest episode we've ever done.
It is, yeah. Let us know if you watch Succession, if you like Succession, if you want episodic reviews next time. Give us all your theories as to what season three is about, because we are loving them.
Yes, yes, yes. Let's talk, let's chat. Chat in the comments. You know where to go.
Bye.
Thanks for listening.
Acast powers the world's best podcasts. Here's a show that we recommend. What do you do when no one else is watching? What do you do that makes you happy for no reason at all? What are you obsessed with? I'm Leslie Arfin, and I'm a writer, but I'm also a dancer, a painter, a vapor, a dollhouse enthusiast, and basically just an overall hobbyist. My podcast, Filling the Void, is all about what other people are fanatically into. We talk about hobbies, even if you don't have one.
Listen to Filling the Void on Tuesdays on the Irios Network and subscribe wherever you get your podcasts.
Acast helps creators launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts everywhere. Acast.com.